Jeff Harding here with PS Tech, and I'm here with another interview. And I'm bringing on a friend of mine, a fellow that's, well, he's halfway around the world from me, but it's as if we're in each other's backyard sometimes. I really appreciate him coming on because this is a subject that might not, you know, a lot of people might not think they have these kind of issues, and this is about PTSD or post-traumatic stress disorder. This is a subject that quite often is attributed with incidences of war, of battles, of being in the military, things like that. But there's other places where this comes into line as well. But nonetheless, this is a subject that can be a really touchy one, a tough one, because when people go through some real heavy trauma, it can be a major blocker for almost anything in their life, anything definitely that includes joy or peace. And so I appreciate Andy coming on the line with us, being that PTSD is one of the areas that he specializes in, and excited to have him on with us here so that you can listen in to some wonderful perceptions that he has, some points that he has, whether you're suffering from PTSD or you're a therapist, counselor that's dealing with someone with PTSD. We're going to talk with Andy about how do I use PS Tech, and he also uses another modality or two. How do we deal with these kind of issues of that surround PTSD and other things that might be related? So I'd like you to welcome on board here on this call Andy Eckley from the United Kingdom. Andy, are you there with me?
Hi, Jeff. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for coming on with us. I appreciate it, and so does everybody else listening today. First of all, we were chatting the other day, and I wanted to talk about a couple things that you brought up in general. Regarding, now we're going to talk about how to use PS Tech for PTSD. That's a mouthful.
Yeah.
But also
yeah.
We're going to talk about some other, you'd use EFT as well. And
yeah.
We'll talk about that. But I wanted to touch on something that I had a note here on that you had mentioned, and I'm, oh, I guess an advocate for this as well. And you talked about one of the things that you wanted to kind of clear up in people's minds, and that's the subject of the one-minute wonder. Can you talk about that for a moment? I know the one-minute wonder is something in EFT, and you know that's where we think, well, I can just tap on something and I'll be done. And I know it comes up with PS Tech too, because I know some people with PS Tech have had an issue. They run the click
yeah.
track, and boom, that particular emotion or that particular event is cleared up. So you know you can look at that and say that's a one-minute wonder, but what's your perception on this whole subject of this one-minute wonder?
I feel that it could hold back some people accepting the therapy, because if somebody's got severe anxiety or PTSD, that's a really huge thing in their life, and it may even be a little bit disrespectful for somebody to come along and say, well, we can just get rid of that just in 1 minute, and it's really, really easy. It's as if you're saying to them that what they've got isn't important. They won't even try the therapy if you come at them at an angle that I can just click my fingers and it'll just disappear. I think they need to be kind of understood and taken seriously on what's traumatizing them.
Mm-hmm.
And another aspect, I think, is if we want to try and get the therapies accepted in the medical world, that one-minute wonders isn't the way to go, really. I feel that that's just too simplistic. And if somebody's got PTSD, there'll be maybe hundreds of traumatic incidents, and it's more realistic to go at the majority of those incidents in detail and then clear them one by one and have a consistent program where you're chopping down one of the trees, to use Gary Craig's terms, you're chopping down one of the biggest emotions that they've got, and then on to the next memory and the next memory. And I think the one-minute wonder sometimes has put people off EFT, because they try it for 1 minute, it doesn't work, and then they just discard it, whereas really if they'd have kept on going and repeating, then EFT probably would have worked for them. So I'm hoping that in PS Tech, we understand that some things are that you've got to work hard on some things to go through all of the memories and clear them. That's my feeling on 1 minute.
So the bottom line is when we're either working with someone, and I'm going to kind of speak to the broad audience. We're going to have people listening here that are suffering from these kind of issues,
yeah,
and also people that are attempting to work with people that have these issues and help them out.
Mm-hmm.
So when someone has an issue, whatever that issue might be, let's say it's not PTSD per se right now, but
yeah,
any kind of issue, we really don't know how many memories, how many experiences, how many beliefs and behaviors, mm-hmm, and whatnot, as Tim talks about his law of three, the emotions, behaviors, and beliefs. Those,
yeah,
are the three that we need to address most times, you know, not always,
yeah,
but most times. When we first go in, we're not sure exactly. Is there just one experience that's the cause and everything will collapse around it?
Mm-hmm.
Or are there several that need to be handled, that need to be addressed? We don't know going in, so you don't know if it can be a one-minute wonder or not.
No, you don't.
So there's the danger of going in with that first off. Now, I know, like with phobias, and going a little off on a tangent here, quite often phobias can be very simple.
Yeah,
they're usually attached to one or maybe two, for, you know, not trying to quantify it, but and it can be a little quicker than most things. Not always, but most times it can run that way. And it could take one session, maybe not 1 minute, but you can do it in a session.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. You don't want to approach someone and say, hey, this is going to take years or months. Or I mean, you don't really want to quantify it because you don't know, right?
No, you don't.
So how do you approach it? If you tell someone it's going to take a long time, that could kind of shut them down too and be an impediment. How do you convey to someone, this will work, it might not be overnight, you know, it's not that kind of a thing, but this will work and get you, enable you to transcend this issue that's in the way? How do you communicate that?
I get them to fill out one of the PTSD forms first, which will quantify their phobias. There's four different sets of surveys on there, which is to do with their sleep and their insomnia,
okay,
and to do with their health and well-being, and there's a PTSD set of questions as well. And depending on the scores that they get on each of the forms, that would say to me the severity of the PTSD, and then I would encourage them to go. My two main programs are a 63-hour program and a 21-hour program. So it depends how bad they are on the scale, which one I would recommend.
Okay.
So the 21-hour would be just a 3-day. So that would be kind of, if somebody is severely traumatized and got PTSD, I think a 3-day is just about the right time slot.
Okay. So you really don't talk about the time factor so much. You don't even really address it.
No, I suppose I'm saying to the people that within that program that there will be a release from the PTSD by the time the program finishes in that 3 days.
Okay.
Or if I think it's more severe at the end of the 63-hour program. But they would only have to do that program once. So there would be like a time limit there. It wouldn't be something that normally they would have to keep repeating, because PS Tech would be so efficient at clearing the memories that you could do it within that structure.
Okay. But you're not really going in and giving them a commercial, per se, until you assess that.
I think you should assess it first, yeah.
Good.
Otherwise, people do react differently, don't they? People's pain levels are different. It could be what quite often I found is that the people who don't mention things and they're quieter and they say that it's not a problem, they might have more than somebody that would, on the surface, seem completely racked in pain. And you can't really tell from just chatting the first time you meet somebody. But I think when you fill out these forms, it really gets a lot of information out of them, more than you would be able to on, say, a half-hour consultation or something.
Okay.
And then you can make a good decision then on which way to go. And it could even be that they're quite slight in it, and maybe it doesn't have to be face-to-face. Maybe they won't be re-traumatized by working on their own. They could work on their own or at the other end of the phone, go through the tracks and go through the procedure.
Okay.
It depends, really. For me, it depends on this score and how bad they look.
I was just taking a real quick look at this form that you have. Okay. And, yeah. By the way, the form that you have there online is on your website. Let me give you a chance here. We didn't really talk about this. I kind of jumped into the subject right away. And we'll mention it now and also toward the end. I wanted to mention that Andy's in the northern part of England near Blackpool, which is about an hour north of Manchester. What's your contact info, Andy? What your website and any other contact info you want to give out? Why don't you go ahead and do that now?
Oh, okay, the trauma website is www.ptsttrauma.com. PTSDtrauma.com. The contact, the Skype contact is andy.eckley, which is andy.eckley. My office number is 01253 726222. And that's a UK number, of course.
Okay. And if they go to your website, they can email you. You have a form on there, right? Contact form?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's help at PTSDtrauma.com. Yeah.
Okay, good. All right. Now,
and they can ask me any questions, really, Jeff. You know, it's not that they're going to be under any pressure to come and join any programs or anything. You know, if they've got anything they want to know, just email me, and we'll see if I can help in any way.
Yeah, I was looking at that, actually. I was going to mention that myself. You have a little link on here, ask an expert, and then click on there, and they can email you questions. Good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good deal.
And I'll try and reply within the same day.
Okay, good. The other aspect that I had kind of noted on here about the one-minute wonder and putting that out there, possibly people get discouraged. And I think this is a good note to make for people to be careful about your marketing. I know the one-minute wonder is a nice marketing tool. You know, it sells, that kind of thing. But there is... there is a dark side to all of that, and that can be that discouragement, which if someone doesn't meet the expectations that you're promoting, then they're going to walk away, and that flies in the face of one of the practices or characteristics of the person that's using PS Tech or any modality for that matter, and that's persistence. Can you just briefly talk about that, because I noted here persistence, if they don't persist, they could slip back. What does that mean?
Yeah, I do find it in practice, if people come on, say, a 1 or 2 hour session, that we can have great results in that 1 or 2 hours, and they say that all of their figures, their scores have gone down to 0 out of 10, but really in the real life then when they go out, something has just re-triggered them.
Right.
And instead of coming back in and doing another lot, it's tempting for them then to drop out and to say, well, that didn't work for me, when it might be just a very small aspect that we didn't cover. And one more session might have just cleared it. But then those people then may not come back for therapy. And I think the longer that's why I've made the programs really to be so intensive, that people are committing themselves to a certain number of hours, which will give plenty of time to clear everything away. And one thing, Jeff, we do in the program is that we do follow-ups 6 weeks and 12 weeks later. So that if they go home and something has traumatized them or re-triggered some memory, that we can catch that in a follow-up 6 weeks later and another 6 weeks after that. For me, that would be a face-to-face follow-up, but for the next 12 months then, there would be free Skype support. So if something does re-trigger somebody, that we can go through the tracks again and clear it out and make sure that we do a thorough job. With severe anxiety and PTSD, we really need to do a thorough job to help the quality of life. And what I find as well is that fairly often, really, people completely forget how bad something was to them after you've cleared it away, and and could even say that really wasn't important to them, and yet 15 minutes before they were 10 out of 10 off the scale, really, really crying. And yet 15 minutes later, they will say that's not important because they've so thoroughly cleared something.
Okay.
And that can cause them to think maybe that that the work wasn't as good as maybe it was, if that's making any sense, Jeff.
Yeah, or I think what you were alluding to, too, was, okay, you clear something on one level, but maybe there's some more stuff underneath. Is that...
And that overpowers, and the stuff that's underneath overpowers them then, and they forget the good work that was done clearing the bigger issue.
Right.
And they're all focused now on the smaller issue, which needs clearing again.
Okay.
So it is persistence, isn't it?
So persistence is important, yeah.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm.
And again, going back to this one-minute wonder, when we do that from, you know, if we really emphasize this too much, we have an issue here, possibly. You're setting someone up to put them in a position of not persisting, maybe.
Yeah.
Because I know some people have said before in some emails, gosh, I see these people having results, and maybe I'm just not able to be helped, or maybe there's something really wrong with me, or I'm not, you know, I'm hopeless, those kind of things. So, you know, I know that can creep into people's thoughts. So, you know, I appreciate this subject, and I want people to really pay attention to this because I think it's important, especially when we're working with others, to be sure that we are there to promote persistence. Even if they're doing fine on their own, still persist in being aware of things that come up. Be aware of consciously putting forth intention that is in the direction or of the desires that you want.
Yeah, and for the therapists out there, they really do have to work on their own stuff before they go into severe anxiety or PTSD, because you really can't have the person you're working with seeing that you're being traumatized by their story. You need to be completely unaffected, which for people will mean that you need to go through the incidents in your life and clear out all of the negative or traumatic incidents that happened to you, so that when the person is telling their story, you're the strong one in there, and you're the one in control, and you're guiding them through it and not being traumatized yourself, either during the interview or afterwards.
Okay, so when you're working with somebody and helping them through, if, let's say, somebody had a traumatic war experience of some type, and it doesn't have to be war, by the way, right?
Yeah, it could be firemen or policemen or it
okay.
could be members of the public whose family were murdered, or, yeah, it could be lots of different triggers, yeah.
So if you're appalled by that or affected by it, and this doesn't mean you enjoy it, that's not what I'm saying, but if you're shocked by it, appalled, really emotionally responsive in those ways, that could be a problem, right?
I think so. I think that they can lose confidence in you, that you're in control, and you know that they can fully let go because they know that you're a safe, strong person to be with them. I think if you're reacting to them, they won't let go 100% because they won't want to traumatize you, and they can see you welling up or being affected. And that could be a barrier to completely clearing things. They'll keep some things to themselves.
Okay.
Of course they don't have to. Of course they don't have to tell you what they're going through, do they? They can just know themselves when they're working on the track what images they're working at. But I find usually when I'm working with people that they do want to tell the story as well.
Yeah.
And for me, that's where the continual tapping comes in. So I'm doing the EFT tapping on the karate chop point continually as they're telling the story. And if they're up for it, I get the client to do that as well. So while we're just talking and seeing which avenues to go down, we're both continually tapping, so we're clearing ourselves as we're going along.
Okay.
And I think that could be a good tip. So that's not the whole, we're not doing setup language and we're not going around the points. We're just doing one karate chop point, just as a balancing.
Well, I wanted to go through that a little bit on how you're using EFT and PS Tech together. But before you do that, The other thing I wanted to first kind of touch on, because we kind of just did for a moment, how does someone know they have PTSD, and how is that classified? What are the symptoms? Those kind of things. Can you kind of touch on that a little bit?
Okay. There's three main groups of symptoms. There's avoidance symptoms, which is when people are avoiding the thoughts and the feelings of a traumatic event, or they're making an effort to avoid places or people that remind them of a traumatic event. And there's hyperarousal symptoms, where they're feeling constantly on guard or jumpy, or they've got outbursts of anger. And the third one is a re-experiencing symptoms, where the memories are upsetting them. They're having nightmares and inability to sleep through the night.
Okay.
And that's the three main areas of symptoms of PTSD.
When you say avoidance, what do you mean? You said thoughts, avoiding the thoughts and the feelings of trauma.
And anything that could trigger off those thoughts as well. So it might be...
How does that come out in what do you... Is this something that you can notice in people if they're practicing avoidance?
For me, I would be trying to draw that out of them in the conversation. That should come out as well when they do the SA 45 forms that we got.
Okay. What's an example of an avoidance symptom?
I think a classic example is the World War II veterans that have never to this day talked about what they did in the war.
Hmm.
And that's a classic avoidance where it's too overwhelming to even go anywhere near there, so they completely try and block that out as if it never happened, as if it was a different time and a different person experiencing it.
Yeah, people quite often say this. They'll say, well, I don't want to relive it. I don't want to go there. Why do I have to go there? How do we address that?
I had an incident probably about 5 or 6 years ago where I had this gentleman say that he didn't want to go to this traumatic incident where he was locked in a bank safe. They were constructing and working in the bank, and one of his friends shut the door behind him on the safe, and none of them had the key for it. And that memory, that trauma was staying with him. It was, of course, in any enclosed spaces, in lifts or in aeroplanes, he was being re-traumatized because of that first incident. And he didn't want treatment on it. It was just like, I don't want to revisit that again. It's not bothering me. And yet it was plainly bothering him for every year since that he was weary of enclosed spaces. And it would have been just, he would have just got on with his life so much freer if he'd only come for some sessions for it. I think it's just a fear, isn't it, of it's too overwhelming maybe for them to, it's easier for them to keep it down and pretend that, no, it's not bothering me.
Yeah, somebody the other day said this to me. They called it the fear of the fear. So if you have somebody that really seems like they're avoiding not just the memory but the emotion, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it hurts,
yeah.
Bottom line. And, of course, the mind is going, why do I want to go somewhere where it hurts? It doesn't make sense. So, you know, what's one way to kind of approach people that are avoiding the emotions, avoiding the memory?
I think I would change it into a physical pain. So I would say, does that make you feel anything in your body now thinking of that? Is there anything happening in your body while you just touch on that memory that you don't want to go? And virtually every time they will say, yeah, I'm feeling something somewhere, like a pain in my chest or my solar plexus, or it's giving me a headache. And then I would try and work on that, making that a stronger image for them. So I would ask them, you know, what exactly is it like? And is it like a dagger in there, or is it like a heavy weight? And I ask for the color of the weight and the texture, and trying to make it real for them. And then we'd work at clearing that imagined, what would we call it, Jeff? That
discomfort, feeling, a feeling.
Yes.
So how do you clear it? Do you use PS Tech or using something else? What do you do?
I use both, really.
Okay.
If I was using tapping to clear that, I would be trying to, as we're tapping on the clarity point, I would be getting the client to try and remove that from their body and put it into a box and then tap on the box so that they're not internalizing their pain of the memory. The memory then, they've taken it out of themselves and they put it into a box. And so then when they're talking, it seems more disconnected, so that they can be tapping away the whatever it is that they've got in the box. It could be an inferno of some sort in there, and they're tapping on the inferno, getting it down and down and down, and until eventually it could just be dust inside the box, and when they open the box up, there's nothing in there. And then that would be a way of kind of sneaking up on the memory they don't want to get at, because that is really connected to that memory. Even though we haven't mentioned it once, all we've mentioned is the physical feelings they have when they're thinking of it. So I think maybe that's one of the ways I would go at first if somebody doesn't want to go down the track.
So you're using some imagery. I'm going to I'm going to say, rather than visualization, I'm going to call it imagery. They just do the best they can to imagine it, whatever that is. And I think Tim talks about this. It's the intent of that imagery. It doesn't have to be a, you know, full color surround sound screen. Do the best you can with the imagination. Everyone can imagine something. Maybe not visualize, but imagine.
I do feel that when we're working through memories, that it's really good when they start to be less vivid in color and they start to fade to a gray and they can't quite get hold of it the same. And I feel we're getting somewhere then when the imagery is changing.
With the avoidance, we kind of make it sound like we're avoiding it with them as well. In other words, we're going to kind of sneak up on it. So in a way, we're aligning with them in terms of, okay, we're not going to go there, but we're going to go in the back door. You just don't tell them. You just start kind of going down there slowly. And I think what you're doing here is you're opening the door. You're cracking open the door to begin to get in there. And you go in there when they're ready to go. True?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
And there's no rush to get in through that door as well.
Right. Unless you insist on a 1 minute wonder, right? And I think this is a good point, because if we're driving for a 1 minute wonder, we can re-traumatize or strengthen the avoidance symptom. And thicken the wall or create another layer. And so that's why it's not in the interest of, well, I want to be careful and respectful. That could be part of it. But I mean, the main reason for this is to allow us to go in as gently as possible. That's what works. And Tim makes this point. He says, driving hard on these things doesn't work with therapy. In fact, on one of the most recent programs, he quoted, self-awareness without self-kindness is self-abuse, which came from a good friend of mine here on the island, Dana St. Clair from Malaic Ministries. We got to be gentle and be kind. And so I think when we're sitting and doing and helping people work out these issues, is I think part of our job is to help remind them to be kind to themselves.
And not kind of lead them too much through with your own agenda that you want to push them on and push them on. We need to be walking side by side with them, really, and just guiding them a little bit. You can often see when you see some demonstrations by experts that have done, say, EFT for years, and they've got a routine in their mind, and they're going off down the way they want to go with the words they want to use. And really, you've got to be closer to the person and where they are, and not forcing them on, if that makes any sense at all, Jeff.
Well, absolutely, and I think, because a lot of modalities and whatnot talk about rapport, but I want to go one step further, and I want us to go into trust. In other words, a two-way trust.
Okay.
The client will trust me when I trust them. In fact, I have to trust first, and what I mean by trust them, I have to trust their subconscious. The subconscious knows what the issue is. It knows the cause, be it experiences and emotions or beliefs or behaviors. Subconscious has the answer. It's in there somewhere. We have to trust that it's in there and keep reminding them that the answer's there. and we're just there to help them discover it.
Yeah.
I can't expect them to trust me if I don't trust them. I can't get what I don't give. How could I possibly do that? I want to go beyond rapport and go into trust. And this comes back to what you mentioned earlier about, you know, as a practitioner, therapist, counselor, do your own work. Don't walk in with expectations.
Yeah, that's vitally important, isn't it, to get your own work done.
Absolutely.
First. Yeah.
With avoidance, though, sometimes comes up the other symptom I wanted to touch on, with hyperarousal.
Yeah, this is probably one
anger.
Of the most ones that they would say is the big problem, because with hyperarousal, they'd have a difficult time sleeping at night and may only sleep for 1 or 2 hours in the evening, because the thoughts are just going round and round and round in their heads. They're having flashbacks to the incidents, and that can be a more dangerous part of it for their family, because they'd be irritable and having a short fuse. And
so these are the more outward expressions. I think the avoidance is a little more inward.
Whereas they're experiencing any avoidance, that's more internal, and people won't realize the trauma that that they're going through.
Do you have hyperarousal come out during a session?
I never have, no.
Never have, okay, all right.
No,
okay.
No.
How is this helpful, this symptom, or is it just a symptom just to note that there's an issue and we start there? Is this helpful at all, knowing that this hyperarousal symptom, whatever it might be?
For me, it's helpful on knowing how bad the PTSD is on them. It's completely gone. It'll come back to me in a minute.
Okay.
I know that hyperarousal, you've got the amygdala in the deep brain sending off the fight or flight signals, which can take like 20 minutes to calm down from. And so if somebody was to get one of these symptoms, you'd have to really understand that you've got to either tap or do at least 20 minutes on some click tracks until all of that adrenaline has left the body and been reabsorbed.
One of the tools that we have with the advanced package is the anger loop, which is really applicable only to loved ones. So that's one way to deal with this symptom. But is there anything else you do to deal with the symptoms, any of the hyperarousal symptoms per se, or do you just use them as clues to find the cause?
Yeah, and using them really as feedback the next day to see how they've changed.
Oh, so it's kind of like a gauge, like... Yeah, okay, all right.
Yeah, because whether they're sleeping has gone up to 4 hours instead of 1 hour, and it's really good to see where they are in the journey then.
And then the third symptom you mentioned was re-experiencing symptoms. What does that mean exactly?
So they're frequently having upsetting thoughts or memories.
Okay, flashbacks.
About the PTSD, They might be having nightmares or flashbacks.
Okay. Do you actually address the actual re-experience? You know, if they have flashbacks, you address the flashbacks, or how does that work? How is that helpful?
I always have done, yeah. I've always tried to work on the memory, so when they're telling me we'll be doing this continual tapping, and then when I feel it's the right time that they are completely concentrating on that flashback, then I'll put them through a click track then. And it's usually astounding the difference. A difference 12 or 18 minutes of a click track will do for them. And
So they're having a flashback, like a memory, right? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, and I would try and get that memory then. I would try and click track that memory or tap that memory away and then test it then afterwards by trying to get them to re-remember the memory and to see whether it still affects them. Because I think that's an important thing on when we're working with PTSD, that we don't just cross our fingers and hope that it's worked, but we keep retesting the memories and the emotions and the beliefs that the client's got.
As you're working with them, let's say, on flashbacks and other memories, and we talked about this, rather, you know, this is something we need to persist at because there may be layers of memories and multiple memories.
Yeah.
How do you get these other memories out to deal with? PS Tech, quite often, other memories will come up that are related, right?
Yeah. So for me, I get them out by just discussing how, when they come off the track, just trying to work out what's changed.
What kind of discussion? What do you ask? What do you talk about?
So what questions would I ask?
Yeah.
And I suppose they're going to be different to everybody, but
yeah.
I would say, you know, what's changed now? And I would keep it in the positive, really, assuming that something has changed when they've gone through a track.
Mm.
So I wouldn't say, you know, has anything changed? I would say, no, what's changed now? How do you feel different? And they will always then say the different emotion that they're feeling, which is quite often a little bit of confusion that they're hoping that it's worked and they're thinking that it's worked, but they need like a little bit of time just to settle down and get over the track, really.
I think that's important too, isn't it? You're shifting the mind model.
Yeah.
Maybe subtly, maybe not, depending how foundational this experience is to their symptoms of PTSD. Mm. So I think the mind needs some time to recalibrate, eh?
Absolutely, and I would usually try and get them to drink a glass of water as well and rehydrate
right.
themselves and just maybe have 5 or 10 minutes just chatting about something else and just let them deal with it.
How many memories do you cover with a click track in a sitting, in a session?
Well, I suppose I try and get them to be completely in the one when I put them on the track.
Right, right.
Yeah, I try and be fairly specific, really.
Do you ever do more than one memory in a sitting, in a session?
Not that I can recall. It's
not
usually
rarely.
They've been talking about the one incident, and then
okay.
That's with PTSD, with some other things. I bundled it up into
into a
global thing. But that wouldn't be on PTSD, really.
Okay, so it's something really heavy trauma. Find it rare that you're going to, in a session, you're going to deal with more than one memory, right?
In one play of a click track or in the whole?
Well, I mean, okay, all right. Two issues here now, so let me split these apart. First, there's, if we have a memory that they're dealing with, they're recalling, that has a real heavy emotion, you might have to run the click track more than once. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
True? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, there might be a different aspect of it which they haven't kind of cleared, yeah.
Oh, okay, so something else may come to their mind about the memory, or they might have more than one emotion, right?
Yeah, absolutely. They could have a lot of different emotions, couldn't they, with anger and grief and whatever you're coming out, yeah.
I've found anger gets buried a lot,
yeah,
consciously at least. When we uncover some of the other aspects, then the anger comes up, and sometimes vice versa. You get rid of the anger, and then the guilt is under there, sadness. And that's why I think it's important not to make that distinction and go, well, anger's always buried, or anger's always covering something. You never know. True?
No, it could be really on the surface with some people, yeah.
Yeah. I know Tim once said to me, because I asked him about, well, okay, what's the standard process for, you know, blank? I forget what the question was, but the answer stuck in my mind. And he says, well, here's how I usually go. I start out. But he says, every time I think I have the process for something, someone comes along and blows it apart.
Right.
So as I said, you know, you kind of go along, you begin in maybe a standard manner, but, and does this make sense for you? You have to be flexible, true?
Yeah, absolutely. You don't want to be fixed on the way you're going to do the session. Just trust you'll do it the right way for the client.
Trust them and trust yourself.
Yeah, and trust what's coming through to you, even if it seems the wrong thing to say. You know, just trust yourself with your thoughts, and it could be that sentence or phrase that you're a bit afraid to say might be the key to unlocking some trauma.
Right. Now, so we've talked about the symptoms of PTSD, avoidance, hyperarousal, re-experiencing. Again, people may think of PTSD as being someone that's been through, like you mentioned, firemen, policemen, military. Absolutely,
yeah.
They're okay. They kind of see the worst of the human side, right?
Yeah.
But is that the only source of PTSD?
I think it can be a buildup of stress as well.
Someone have a PTSD that's not related to something as, I'm not going to say obvious, but it's something that is, okay, when we think PTSD, we think of people that were in the military or maybe saw murder. Are there other kind of post-traumatic stress disorders that come from something that's maybe not that dramatic?
I think they could be in some emotional situations, or if somebody's got some psychological issues, they could lose all of their confidence maybe, and they could have quite similar symptoms to PTSD when they're completely confused and at the lowest ebb. There might not have been anything physical that's happened or they've seen, but it could be just a complete breakdown in themselves.
Okay.
And I think they would come up with very similar symptoms that we're talking about for post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah, the other aspect I wanted to mention too was, if someone looks at their life and says, well, I wasn't in the military, I didn't work in any of these kinds of vocations, security, police, fire, any of those kind of vocations, so I shouldn't have any post-traumatic stress. But we can have it, and I think it's the subtle ones that affect us and keep us down, and we look at it and go, well, it wasn't that bad.
And it could even come from a very early age that maybe half-forgotten trauma that's happened, and maybe a 5 or 6 or 7 year old, that can be with you 40 years later, and the symptoms could be very similar to PTSD.
Okay, right. Now, when you're working with somebody and you're using EFT and PS Tech, can you kind of give us a summary? What are some of the things you do? And you mentioned initially when they first come to you, they come to you because they want to be free of this torture. This suffering, this constant stress that's either coming in hyperarousal, or it could also be just be under the surface. It's just kind of driving them crazy. Now, you mentioned using EFT. Now, how do you use EFT when you work with someone on these kind of things? You mentioned not doing the setup and all that. How do you do that?
Yeah, it's just as soon as they sit down, and the first thing I say, no, just try and copy what I'm doing. We're just going to tap on this point, which is the karate chop point.
So you just use that one point?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I feel that that's plenty just to balance them as they're talking.
Okay.
And everyone is different, and some of them then I've gone on to do full-blown EFT with set of phrases and going through the gamut procedure. But really how I start the session is before they say anything, which is the most traumatic time for them, really, because they don't know you yet. And they go into really right into the crux of the problem straight away. So I say, before we say anything, they'll just start tapping and start copying me, and they start tapping. And then I say, okay, now tell me. Now tell me what's the problem. And with them tapping at the same time, usually that will keep them balanced and they don't get quite so traumatized as they're imagining they're going to be.
Mm.
And I might spend 15, 20 minutes just tapping continually with them and trying to get at the first memory or incident or emotion that we're going to sit them down and go through the click track. And I would probably do only 2 or 3 plays of a click track in an hour, and the rest of the time then we'll just be chatting and continually tapping on the karate point.
So you're kind of using EFT in the moment to keep them from getting overwhelmed.
I think it does make it easier for them, because I really want them on the SUD scale of 0 out of 10. I really want them to be between, say, 4 to 10 to 6 out of 10 on the scale when I'm working with them. I don't really want them to be 9 or 10 off the scale, or even just 1 or 2 if they're not connecting with it. Ideally, I want them right in the mid-range, and then I find that's easier for them then to kind of get through the session. They're not getting frightened by the experience then. They can see that it's being controlled and that it's a safe procedure to go through.
So when they're giving you input from the start, from the very beginning, don't wait until they get hyper-aroused. You're using this karate chop point from the very start, from the very beginning, as they start to tell a story or how they feel, right?
And I think a lot of work is done then right in the beginning. And yet maybe if you ask them after an hour or two, they'll say the click tracks did all the work. But you know yourself that it was a combination of the two, that keeping it on an even level was really important.
So you're almost keeping them relaxed from the very beginning.
Yeah, absolutely.
In a relaxed state, they're able to be aware of things that come up rather than being overwhelmed by them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're kind of staying on top of it before it gets out of hand.
Yeah.
Okay.
And maybe there's other ways that other therapists can do that don't know about.
Sure. Sure. Well, this is about you and your way. You're the only thing that's important right now. So. And then you're using PS Tech as per the instructions, right?
Yeah, and I'm just deciding which track. It could even be the free tracks, and I usually add the accelerators, mm-hmm. and especially the relaxation accelerator when I feel that, you know, they're kind of getting a bit tapped out now, and it's just a nice 20 minutes of relaxation with no tap in, and I feel that that's important every few hours to go through that on a session. If I'm doing an all-day session, I'd like to do the accelerator a few times.
So you're doing sessions not just like an hour or two. Sometimes you'll sit and you'll go through various things through a 6-7 hour period, something like that?
Yeah. At the most, a 7-hour period, yeah.
Okay.
We're just like an hour off. For lunchtime, so it'll be like 9 a.m. to 5:30, that sort of time.
Do you give them like homework, home play? I call it home play, stuff for them to do in between sessions, or is there an in between? There must be an in between.
Well, if I'm doing the treatment programs, it's on consecutive days.
Okay, so they're not doing anything in between.
So in between, it would just be that one evening, so hopefully they'll be with their family or just relaxing on that time.
Okay.
So I wouldn't give them anything, because either that's 7 hours of work. And,
yeah, true.
Yeah.
Is there any instructions you give them, per se, in between? Like.
No, just to relax. Not worry about it. Yeah, not worry about it, not go over it, just.
So you're not having them make notes or anything?
No. But then the next morning, then, I'll be seen asking them what happened in the evening and did anything trigger them and what this sleeping was like, and get out of them then everything that happened in the evening. So I don't feel that you need to ask them to take notes, but you can do that in the morning.
Right.
Yeah, start off a session.
Now, you do most of your work face-to-face, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you done anything like this over the phone yet?
Not with PTSD. No.
Okay, not with PTSD, okay.
No.
What's your feeling on that? Is that something that could be done over the phone? What do you think?
I think it depends how high on the scale they are.
Okay.
I like to be there and see their face and see how they're reacting. Hopefully you'll be able to tell on the phone, but you're not quite so helpful, I think. You're not okay. There to talk them through it. I would be a bit concerned if somebody really got re-experienced straight away before they trusted the process and just put the phone down or something.
Right.
Whereas if it's face-to-face, on the first time they see you, at least you can get them over any issues that come up. But I think that wouldn't matter then after they've seen you once or twice.
So you'd want to get your
trust in it.
You'd want to get your PTSD SA-45 form first and see at what level they're at. And you mentioned on the phone, but maybe on Skype, you know, you got a video, so that's possible, right?
Yeah.
So,
it is possible, I think, as long as they're not right off the scale, I think it is possible to do.
Right,
especially a Skype would be quite good if you could see them and you could see the reactions they're having and keep them going. Yeah.
I'm just trying to nudge you in that direction because more people need help out there. So.
Absolutely. It's just as long as they can trust, isn't it, that it's going to help them and not give up at the first hurdle.
Right.
And then walk away from the therapy. That would be my only concern.
So I have some nice notes here. First of all, let's kind of shelve the one-minute wonder. It's fine and dandy if you do, great. But when it comes to PTSD, I'm not going to say it's impossible. I hate to say that about anything. You never know. But in general, we should go forward with the intention that I'm going to persist, whether it's a minute, an hour, a day, a week, whatever it takes.
Yeah.
Until you get that forward momentum going where you become imperturbable. You're no longer vulnerable to those kind of thoughts.
Yeah.
it's important for to if you have PTSD, you work with someone that has their stuff taken care of as well.
Very important. You don't want to go jumping into being a PTSD therapist until you've dealt with your issues. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I can see some. You're using, and like you said, you know, therapists and counselors use different aspects. You're using EFT to kind of keep them relaxed throughout the process.
Yeah.
And you're just tapping on the karate chop point over and over again, basically.
Yeah, generally, although everyone is different, and I may go into full-blown EFT session.
Yeah, depending. Yeah. But you kind of go with it if you feel that it's right, true?
Yeah, and if they're up for it, really, and if they want to go down that route.
When it comes to neutralizing the memories, PS Tech seems to be the one that you're using mainly.
Yeah, it seems to be.
EFT is kind of, you're using EFT to release some of the feelings, keep their energy system straight so they don't get overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Maybe address their fear of the fear, I'm imagining here, right?
Yeah, and then clearing it with a click track.
And then clearing it with the click track. But ultimately, the click track you're using to really handle this and be done with it, if you will, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And again, symptoms we have avoidance, hyperarousal, re-experiencing. Some of the questions that I wrote these down, I like this, is after you run a click track, you're asking them not did you have any changes, but you're asking what's changed now. You're directing their questions so they'll see the change. How do you feel different? Those are some great questions I'm going to add to mine.
That's good.
I'm going to throw this one in here because Tim threw one at me a few weeks ago that I've been really being aware of, and that is looking at the first 30 seconds when somebody tells you their story. That usually has most of everything is in that first 30 seconds or so.
And that's why if you don't do anything in that time, you've missed such a golden chance.
Yeah.
Because you'll never get that first time when they speak about it again.
Yeah.
So that's why I go straight into tapping before they say anything.
Good point. Good tip.
Yeah. And I don't know, would it be an alternative to put them straight on a click track before they say anything? But to me, that would be too quick. I think I'd like to make sure they're in the moment and not just doing a click track with no real thoughts going on.
Right. That sounds kind of anxious anyway.
Yeah.
Let's just get to it.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. And PTSD, of course, can cover the war traumas, urban or any environment with security, police, fire, those kind of things, but can also include sexual trauma, true?
Yeah,
any kind of violence, any of those things as a victim or just observer. You can observe something and have a PTSD kind of situation. But I think on a lower level, if you will, and I'm just saying from an emotional standpoint, I don't want us to, and labels are fine and all that, but in this work, I think we can use some of these same kind of approaches that you're using for people that have the more subtle traumas. I'll say, you know, I constantly was berated by my teachers from kindergarten through grade six. The whole time I had the same teacher, let's say.
Yeah.
And I have all of these traumatic events where, you know, it affects my ability to see any potential in my life other than, you know, the minimal one that I'm living, let's say.
Mm.
So
this system would work just as good for that, wouldn't it? It would work the same, yeah.
So I just don't want people to overlook those, what people would classify as smaller traumas. Let's go for complete freedom.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Don't stop when you just feel a little bit better.
Yeah. I just wanted to reiterate your website again is what?
www.ptsdtrauma.com.
And you said you had a Skype username.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Andy.Eckley. Andy.Eckley.
And you had your office phone available, right?
Yeah. 01253-726-222.
And all that information will be on the page as you're listening to this anyway, everybody, but I just wanted to give you a chance to say that. And you're in the northern part of England outside of Blackpool. I appreciate all the time you're giving us on this. Do you have anything to add, anything you wanted to that we didn't cover?
Came to me straight away as soon as I stumbled across PS Tech, which is how this is one of the few therapies where it doesn't matter which therapist you go to. As long as the therapist has listened to Tim's instructions and knows the therapy inside out. You can go to any PSTEC therapist in the world and have the same consistent standard. And I think there's very few therapies where they can say that people can trust it, and it isn't down to the personality of a therapist to get the results, but the ClickTrax will do it for us.
Gives a little summary as well. As a therapist, as a counselor, as a practitioner, you're there to help them open the door, open the gate to these perceptions that are within their mind that are keeping them from living a life of joy and peace, or Jeep, as I like to say.
Yeah.
And to be the witness, the guide, the helping hand, to help carry the crosses, as some may say, to bear some of that burden, not emotionally, not take it on you, because that's very important to do our own work so we don't take it on and like relive it with them, but take it on metaphorically and say, hey, everything's okay, here's some relief. And I think that's an excellent point of the EFT you're doing there, is giving them some relief in the moment to know that, hey, it's okay, let's walk through this, take care of this, let it go, release it from the old perception, give it a new perception, and then try out that new perception and see how it feels, see how it worked for you.
Yeah.
And be a witness to their, I'm going to go pretty far here, to their perfection that's inside somewhere, that's being blocked.
Yeah, release them to enjoy themselves.
Yeah. Okay, well again, Andy, I appreciate your time on this, giving us some insight on this. I encourage everybody to visit Andy's site, ptsdtrauma.com. Give him a call on his site. He has contact us. If you have any questions on something in this area, feel free to email him. As long as he leaves his email up there, you can do that. So he's a resource for you. In addition to that, and I forgot to mention on the top, Andy's also the director for the PSTEC Registry. So for those that are working with PSTEC as a practitioner counselor, you're using PSTEC, you want to visit the PSTEC registry, you can get listed on there. It's very reasonable. There's also the level one and the advanced testing available. You can get certified on there. Some very good resources. And if you need some help with PSTEC in your own personal work and you're looking for someone to help guide you, the registry is a great place to find someone. And you're not just limited to working with people in person. A lot of work can be done over the phone as well, and there's people that will do that as well with Skype, with phone, etc. So take a look at that, and encourage Andy, if you really want to get some work with your PTSD issues, give him a try on Skype, kind of nudge him a little bit. I'm trying to get him to do that too. So
we've got about 10 or 11 different countries on the register now, so it's slowly spreading around the world.
Good deal. Yeah, absolutely. So
and
I encourage
with the examinations, It's a way of really testing your knowledge, isn't it? If you think you've got a good handle on PSTEC, just take the exam, and I give the feedback afterwards, and we'll send every question that was done incorrect after you pass the exam. You get feedback to see the parts that you didn't quite understand, and I think it helps get a handle on PSTEC more.
Absolutely. What's the web address on that?
www.pstechregister.org.
All right. Well, that's all I have for today. Again, Andy, I appreciate you coming on with me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jeff. It's been a pleasure.
And I know everyone else that's listening in here appreciates it as well. Again, if you want to contact Andy, just look down below. You can click on there and go to his site, to his email, to his phone. This is Jeff Harding again with PSTEC. I appreciate everybody joining in here with Andy and I today. And everybody, take good care, keep on clicking, and we'll talk soon. Aloha.